Wake up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, good Thursday to you. Good throwback Thursday and a good Veterans Day as well. Tony D, Ron Culver, and it is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. It's also Thursday Night Football tonight, as the Miami Dolphins will be hosting the Baltimore Ravens. All right, it's not a better Monday night, Thursday Night Football matchup. Thursday Night Football matchups aren't really all that awesome anyway. But I want to bring up this. I think Tua Tagovailoa, who is listed as day-to-day in this game, which, you know, who knows what that really means. He's got this finger injury. It kept him out of the game against Houston, that debacle of a 9-turnover contest with the Texans. But Tua Tagovailoa has not played a lot this season. I mean, he's missed some games, and he's been fragile over his first two seasons. And look, I don't know where the Dolphins are going with him. I think he was one of the more electrifying players in college football, but I understood sort of the very tentative nature of people who wanted to immediately grade him out as a potential NFL star. We're very cautious to do that. We very rarely give it to a quarterback that, you know, just can't miss. We talk about all the time with Trevor Lawrence and Andrew Luck. And so I understood that, but I really wanted Tua to succeed. I enjoyed watching him play in college, and there was an element to his game that I was kind of hoping would work in the NFL. But it's funny because the Dolphins are talking about his fragility and saying things like, you know, hey, look, in evaluations, the availability of a player is something that we do want to consider. Obviously, availability is very important. Brian Flores was quoted as saying there's a lot of factors that play into that. I wonder if in the end, does Tua Tagovailoa have one of those careers where we never really get a definitive answer as to whether or not he could play in the league or not? Maybe he bounces around and whatnot. You know, you think cream rises to the top. You think eventually if you can play in the league, you find a home. But I don't know. This Dolphins experiment with him hasn't turned out to be that great. He's completed 65% of his passes. He's got 7 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. That's very pedestrian. But he also hasn't really had a chance to grow as a player. A lot of it is because of injuries, and a lot of it is because of expectations that the Dolphins have failed to meet this upcoming season. All right, Tony D, Ron Culver, we are getting underway. A home for Odell Beckham Jr. could be with the Patriots. Will that actually work? We'll talk about that next.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, happy Veterans Day. So we're doing a little different Throwback Thursday today. We're doing more patriotic songs to kind of get you through the day today. So we're glad. So all of you who served, thank you so much. From this show and the people on this show as well as this network, happy Veterans Day. All right, speaking of Patriots, I don't know how to transition properly from that to the New England Patriots. That's the best I got. So there's a very, very good article at The Ringer talking about Odell Beckham Jr. and breaking down the whether or not he would be a good fit for the New England Patriots. Stephen Ruiz wrote it. It's a very good piece. And I bring it to your attention because I think when, for the 20 years that we had Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, whenever we had a free agent like Odell Beckham Jr., whether it's a Randy Moss or an Ocho Cinco or whatever, the Patriots were always a good landing spot because they could give that individual a championship-level team, but they may not be able to give that individual the personal needs in the career of what they're looking for. So, you know, Randy Moss got both, actually. You know, he got a chance, he was on an undefeated team that had a very good chance of winning a championship, although they came up short against the Giants. And he was a major, major reason why. Ocho Cinco, not so much. But Randy Moss got kind of the best of both worlds. So there's about, 6 to 10 teams that are kind of in the running for this, but not really. I think the Chiefs are one of them, and the Patriots obviously get brought up. But let's remember, and I know it's, you know, little, you know, not easy to forget, that a lot of the reason that the Patriots were a great landing spot for players who were looking for a chance to, you know, find a new home was that they really had all the cards. They were capable of winning a championship without you. They showed that they could win a championship without you. But if you wanted to join them to win a championship with them, well, you may have to take less money. You may have to take a different role. You may have to change some of your ways, if you will, because some of the antics that you were using on other teams weren't going to exactly fly. And it's a little bit of a different New England Patriots team now. And while the Patriots are good, I mean, they're not the championship level good without Brady. That so they don't carry the same amount of, well, we could use you or not use you. And that's a different way of looking at this rather than kind of putting Odell Beckham Jr. in the same category as an Ocho Cinco or a Randy Moss when it comes to the Patriots being a landing spot. The Patriots could really, really use him. You know, this wide receiver core that they've sort of got now isn't exactly breaking games wide open, right? They could use him. But as Steve Ruiz points out in The Ringer, where OBJ's sort of success is in middle and deep routes. And right now, that's not what Mac Jones does very well. So, yeah, there's a statistical analysis angle to this, right? Where you could say, all right, Mac Jones doesn't exactly do well with the deep ball or the big over the middle throws. That's where Odell Beckham Jr. is successful. That's where his sort of game is. So we're not exactly marrying a quarterback and a wide receiver that are on the same page. But they certainly could use him if they could change that up somehow in a Josh McDaniels offense. But the reality of it is I don't know if you're Odell Beckham Jr. Look, could you make the Patriots better? Sure. Is it the same kind of Patriots? Like, you're still going to put up with Bill Belichick. But the carrot on the other end had always been, he'll get you to a Super Bowl. My God, he had to 9 of them for crying out loud. But that's not the case now. And is Odell Beckham Jr., knowing who he is that the kind of coach he wants to play for? Not guaranteed anything in this league, right? But the Patriots were always a good bet to get you to a potential title. But they're like everybody else now. If he goes to the Chiefs, he immediately makes the Chiefs better. He's with a quarterback that could utilize that particular skill set that he has. Mac Jones isn't really that quarterback. Now, wherever he goes, wherever he lands, you know, Chiefs, Saints, wherever, Patriots, wherever. There is no, absolutely, he does not make the team an instant championship level team. He wasn't there with Cleveland. He's not going to do it wherever he goes now. But if I'm Odell Beckham Jr., I got to look at whether or not the Patriots are worth it. They spent a lot of money on other players. They don't exactly have a ton of money to spend. In the old days, that never seemed to be a problem. Because, again, they offered you something other teams didn't. I mean, they pretty much offered you a guaranteed playoff run. You know, Super Bowls are hard to guarantee, of course. But the Patriots could easily give any player that came to them an opportunity to go to the playoffs. And that's why players signed with them. Yeah, they probably knew, you know, word probably traveled fast about what kind of coach Bill Belichick was and still is. And for some players, they embraced it, and some players probably would have been like, under any other circumstance, I'm not going to play for that guy. But, here's a big but, I need a title, or I'm going to go to the playoffs, or I haven't been going to the playoffs for the last 4 or 5 years. And I love the way this team is built, so I'll put up with anything to be a part of it. I don't think you'll get that now. I think there's a feeling that it was a package deal between those two, right? Brady and Belichick. I'll go to that team because they have one of the great quarterbacks and they have one of the great coaches. And it didn't matter if you were an offensive or defensive player. I think the Brady angle to it mattered because he was the guy that was, you know, executing enough to get the team over the hump, to get to a Super Bowl, to get to an AFC title game. And now that's not Mac Jones's. I mean, he's a rookie. What do you expect? He can't, you know, So I think that there is a different feeling and a different approach to this team. I think the guys that they signed this offseason, I don't think they could have given them the old Patriot deals. Jonnu Smith, Nelson Agholor, Hunter Henry. I don't think they could give them the old deals. They had to pay them. You know, the guys on defense too, they had to pay them. Because I don't think the mystique of what this team is and what it could mean for your career is in that same vein. And I think for Odell Beckham Jr., you got to figure that out. I think you have to figure out what exactly do you want out of this. Do you want to go to a team that utilizes your skill set and makes you, you know, more of a star in this league, going back to what you used to be? Or do you want to be on a team that has a chance to win a Super Bowl with you playing whatever role necessary? I don't think that's the Patriots. I don't think that's the Patriots in either case. I don't think they have the offense to utilize him the right way he needs to be utilized. And even if he took a lesser role and just was a good wide receiving threat amongst a bunch of others, I don't think this is the, well, I'm just riding the train to a possible ring. So the old days of evaluating this Patriots team are a little different. Still got the coach, but they don't have the same level and the same mystique and the same aura around them that you would put in other conversations.
So do you think his thinking is more like Randy Moss? Like, I could be the next Randy Moss for the Patriots?
Well, no. Because I don't think he has a quarterback like Brady. And, you know, Mac Jones isn't going to throw 50 touchdown passes with him. You know, I don't think he has that. But, you know, I don't know. If you're Odell Beckham Jr., do you wait around for Mac Jones to take year two, year three to be developed as a good quarterback?
No, that's why I'm surprised they're even in the mix.
Yeah. They don't have the money. They really don't. They don't have the money. And I don't think it's a good spot for him. I think he'd be more miserable there. Because if he didn't like what was going on with Baker Mayfield, how is he going to like doing it with Mac Jones? I mean, the article at The Ringer is really good. If you like that sort of analytical dive into it, it's good. I mean, it shows like the different way, you know, here's Mac Jones. Here's where he likes to throw the ball right now. Now, don't get me wrong. We're still talking about a rookie. And we're still talking about an offense that's designed for a rookie. He's not going to take huge, deep throws. That's not going to be part of his game early on. The short passes out of the backfield, short screens, the ones that move the chains, the one that are like 6 or 7 yards, those are the ones he's going to do most of all as a rookie in this league, continuing to learn the speed of the game. You know, when Randy Moss joined the Patriots, Brady was more than happy to chuck it downfield to a speedy wide receiver that got separation. I don't necessarily think Jones is in that position to do that. Doesn't mean he can't. I mean, he's obviously going to have to start doing that as a quarterback in this league, but I don't know, just a thought on where the Patriots are now, where Odell Beckham Jr. is now, and, you know, where we've seen this Patriots team go in the past. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's, just getting underway. Throwback Thursday, but a Veterans Day Thursday as well on Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They're close, convenient, and known for guaranteed everyday low prices and excellent customer service from professional parts people you can trust. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Ah, James Brown, Rocky IV.
Yes.
Remember this movie? Happy Veterans Day, everybody. A little patriotic tunes throughout the morning today.
Why not?
Rocky IV, where would you rate it?
As the most patriotic movie ever?
Oh, yeah. if Rocky's 1 and Rocky 2 is 2, is it better than 3 with Mr. T?
That's a good question.
But with the emotional pull of the death of Mickey? And the fact that Hulk Hogan was in 3?
I know, that's a tough one.
Yeah. It seemed...
I mean, can you have 3A and 3B?
Yeah, maybe so.
Because that's how I kind of look at it.
Rocky Five, nothing, right? Tommy Morrison.
Rocky Five isn't even in the top 15 of Rocky movies.
You know what my biggest thing about Rocky Four is? Is it is a movie I loved at the time it came out, but as I got older, I was like, they took like every cliche of the 80s Cold War and just slapped it on a screen and went, here you go.
The whole boxing match in Russia is hysterical now.
It is. It's so funny.
It's the fans can't clap until they're told to, it feels like.
Oh, and by the way, we're gonna fight on Christmas Day because they're godless, that country.
Yes.
Those people don't even believe in Jesus. We're gonna be fighting on Christmas Day. You're right. And he had to go to Siberia to train, and the KGB following him around, watching his every single move. This was everything we were taught about the Soviet Union
as
kids. Everything, like the way Drago is trained with the drugs and the
high
tech. We always talk about the East German swimmers. Remember the big joke in the '80s with the East German swimmers? Like this was, they had Drago and they just kept pumping them with steroids, using the computers, big generals nodding their head like they're building some superhuman machine. It was every cliche in the book, every cliche was in Rocky IV. But that death of Apollo Creed, man. And then, of course, the Russian feels nothing, right? Because he's an emotionalist being who grew up.
He dies.
Yeah, he's cold-hearted. He has no care in the world that he just killed a man in the ring.
Yep.
Like Ray Boo Boo Mancini killed Dooku Kim in 1982, I think. It bothered him for his whole life.
Of course,
he never got over that. He was devastated that his boxing killed a man. Like, even when they pointed out that it wasn't his fault, he wasn't overly aggressive, it was just the way, just sometimes that happens, and it's very, very unfortunate, but you did nothing wrong. He was devastated, and they just went, yeah, but this guy, he actually enjoys killing boxers in the ring. That's his job.
Even Bruce Willis's character in Pulp Fiction cared.
Right. Remember? That's right, yeah. That's
Butch,
right.
He's like, he died? Oh, man.
Right.
But then he was just more concerned about, like, I got to get out of town because everyone's coming after me because I didn't throw the fight.
You remember, what was that movie, Cinderella Man? Remember Cinderella Man?
Yeah.
They made Max Baer out to be this ruthless boxing killer, and he was the exact opposite. He was not that way in real life. He did not carry that, but he was very devastated that he had killed a man in a ring. It wears on you, but that's what they took Drago and went, boom. No, he's heartless and cold. And then when he finally got him to bleed, he was like, he bleeds. Oh God. He's a man. And if you watch it today, you just sort of go, it's just part of the times. It's one of those movies. It was right for the time. This is weird.
But out of the Rocky movies. Yeah. I mean, one and two obviously stand alone. Like they're up on but it's one of those weird, what was the word I'm looking for? Like, where you have a group of movies together. I don't know why I can't think of the name right now. Like, not trilogy, but you know what I'm talking about? Like
a series?
Yeah. A series of movies where, you do rank them kind of in order.
Yeah.
Like, we don't do that with Star Wars or Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter. Everyone has their opinions on which movie should go first before the other. That one kind of goes in order.
It does.
At least for the first four, because then, I forget about five.
What is so weird about Rocky, and this is where, like, I love Rocky movies. I love them. I was okay with the, what was the one they did like 10 years ago, 11 years ago? Rocky Balboa. I was totally okay with that because I got what they were trying to do. They put it in a seeming reasonable context.
Yeah.
There were old fighters that were getting back in the ring. There was a senior tour, if you will. So it made a little sense.
Kind of what is happening now with Mike Tyson wanting to fight Evander Holyfield and so
it wasn't
on.
Out of the realm of possibility. And the way they did it was, he wasn't trying to prove, he wasn't like, I'm young again. It was like, I'll try it.
I'll be champion of the world.
And the way Rocky shows up in the Creed movies, fine, right? So he's taking the characters the way he goes. But if you watch the original Rocky and you see that character, the way Sylvester Stallone plays that character, and then if you immediately turned on Rocky IV, they're not the same character. That's right. Not the same person. That to go from that guy to a guy giving a speech on Christmas Day in Russia that brings the global, you know, the global audience to its feet, it doesn't correlate.
He may not have won a belt, but he definitely got the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And by the way, Adrian just yelling at him, just you can't win. Driving through the night in a sports car.
It's so funny because the character, Rocky, pretty much isn't even about boxing. It is a sports movie. You know, I'm using quotation marks to call it a sports movie or calling it a box movie. It's really about, you know, all the different characters and how they're together in this.
The first one is a love story. The first one is a love story about a boxer, right? And putting him in his world. But that's the way kind of Stallone wrote it, because he wanted it to appeal to everybody. Like, it wasn't going to be a sports movie for one particular. It's like, I got sports in this, and I got a love story in this for the women. And
to this day, it's still like one of the best date movies.
I remember, I remember you and I talking about it, just kind of breaking down that Rocky. A couple of months ago, now feels like almost a year ago, when I watched it from start to finish without any commercial breaks, without catching it midway through on TBS, I watched it from the beginning to the end, and I was like, this is an unbelievable masterpiece, a masterpiece of work.
It really is. What's funny, if you were thrust in and you only saw, you know, you saw your first Rocky movie was Rocky III, right? Or Rocky IV.
Right.
You would be shocked to say, how did Rocky win the Oscar?
Oh, without question.
That doesn't make any sense. Like, Rocky III, Rocky IV are so far away from even Oscar consideration. And that's because it wasn't about boxing.
Yeah. I mean, I still, like, every now and then I'll go on YouTube and I'll watch the final scenes of Rocky, the original, and it still gives me goosebumps when at the end and all chaos is going around and he's just screaming for Adrian. She's in the back and she closes her eyes and, you know, all of that. It's just, it's great. It was well shot and well put together. Like, it's so well done because he kind of knew what he wanted to do. He made it so that Rocky didn't win, but he got the girl. Like, he knew what he was doing with that screenplay, and he wrote it really quick.
No, he lost the game, but he won life.
Right. So he went like, all right, I'm gonna create this movie, appeals to a lot of different people. This is how I appeal. The sports angle of it is good. The love story angle of it, it's good. It's great. But the other Rockies don't really have that. Like the Rocky IV, and this is why we're talking about it, because it's Veterans Day and we did patriotic music. Rocky IV is all American propaganda. That's all it is.
Completely.
It's 100% propaganda. Rocky IV is a message to the United States citizens back at a time where we didn't know anything about the Soviet Union, that you better thank your lucky stars you were born in this country, because you could have been born over there. Well, and boy, it sucks.
Just compare the two boxing matches. Right, because we played James Brown, Living in America, the boxing match between Drago and Apollo Creed. I mean, the glam, the glitz, the glitter, all before the match.
He's pointing at him. Oh yeah, he's all doing it.
James Brown is performing, and everyone, and you can see, like, even when James Brown is performing, all the Russians, you know, just straight faced.
Yep,
they're not excited to see American music.
They're looking at Drago like, you better kill this guy. Yeah. Like, we don't want to just beat him. You better kill this individual.
Apollo Creed is dancing.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, then they go to Russia, and it's just, you know, I mean, even the lighting in there is, like, all dark.
All dark. It's all, yeah.
The only thing lit up was the Politburo.
God, I mean, what a weird time to grow up. What a weird time.
Like, it really was.
It really was. I remember in the late 80s, Billy Joel played in Russia, and it was a huge deal. It was like there were only a certain number of radio stations. Musical event of the world was, or, Billy Joel playing in Russia.
Or it was actually big news that Russia got jeans.
Yeah,
I remember that. Yeah, Levi, they're selling Levi's in Russia now.
Crazy. I love this show when we do that. Just this whole segment on the political propaganda of Rocky IV. Ah, it was great. All right, coming up more as we get into the NFL, continuing looking at this weekend next.
Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is Veterans Day as we play United States themed songs. Miley Cyrus.
Yes.
Now, this is when she was more innocent, right?
Yeah, I guess
you could say. Is that the right
way to put it? Well, I mean, she portrayed innocence. How about that?
Right, how about that? How about that? Dolphins and Ravens tonight on Thursday Night Football. I know, the NFL gives you these games sometimes where you go, yeah.
It looked good on paper.
It looked good on paper when they put it together. Let me ask this question, and with all respect to pundits like us who go into these preseasons, you know, looking at these teams, were we wrong about the Dolphins, or are the Dolphins not living up to what they should be? Right? Maybe I'm not explaining it right. Are the Dolphins, like everything we said about the Dolphins going into the season, was that right and they're not living up to it? Or did we all get it wrong? Were they never really going to be that good?
I don't know if it's that or we were hopeful. I think hopeful is more because we wanted to see the maturity of Tua.
Well, I think, yeah, and there was a couple of things going on with the Dolphins this season. I mean, remember, the Dolphins were a team that scrapped everything, right, to build a new team. And they felt like they had done that. Remember, they traded Minka Fitzpatrick to the Steelers, for example, got picks. They were shredding salaries, right? They were going through this kind of new turn, and they were going to do it with, you know, Stephen Ross was owning the team. They're going to do it with Brian Flores. He was the guy that was going to be the right man for this. Yes, it was going to be painful, but it wasn't going to be forever. And so most of us looked at this season and said, look, they got their quarterback, or at least they think they got their quarterback. He has to perform at a certain level because this team around him is really good. And they have a chance to go to the playoffs and make some noise and in the future compete for a Super Bowl. If their quarterback is in the right place, if the quarterback isn't in the right place, then all this could be for naught. But they're 2-7 and they're bad. It's not 2-7 on an edge where, oh yeah, just a few here or there. They're 2-7 as a really bad football team that probably is going to be extended tonight. Although I'm not going to say that anymore because now that the Jags beat the Bills, anything's on the table. But it feels like, imagine if you're a Dolphins fan and you went, okay, I'm all in. I'm all in on what you're doing. So they go, look, we've got all of these drafts that we have been wheeling and dealing in, right? We're moving pick here, moving a pick there. Hang with us because we're almost there. And then 2021 starts and all the preseason buzz is, well, if Tua doesn't even have to be a superstar, this team is really good. But now you sit at 2-7. And I wonder if Dolphin fans are going, well, if this didn't work, what's going to work? If everything you did to get to this point where the preseason buzz was about the potential Super Bowl, a team that should compete for a Super Bowl or at least get to be competing, you know, with the better teams in the AFC, and now you're telling me that 9 games into the season it is over? That I'm statistically worse than the Jets? Right? That I wonder how hard that is to take. You know, the Ravens are good. The Ravens are always good, right? The Ravens are, you know, yeah, sure, they've got their ups and downs, but they're a very, very good football team. When we talk about their ups and downs, it is always within the parameters of this is a team that should be very competitive in winning the conference. We're having the exact opposite conversation with the Dolphins, which is all of these moves, all of these things that they've done, all of these things that, again, owner Steve Ross signed off on, that Chris Greer made. Again, dumping Ryan Tannehill, he worked out somewhere else. Minka Fitzpatrick was going to work out anywhere. You know, it doesn't matter. But I don't know. It just, I feel like this is a lost season. But I don't think it's a, oh, don't worry, like, it'll be okay. Like, maybe next year, the certain circumstances will be different that caused us to be 2-7. I don't know. Does it stem from the quarterback? The quarterback hasn't been that great. I mean, Tua's been okay. but I don't think he's destroyed. I don't think it's his fault. He's missed some games. But I don't know. I mean, it's got to be tough. This is the risk you take. I mean, look, Detroit, pay attention because this is what you're doing, right? Remember last week? Was it last week? Yeah, it was last week when we talked about Von Miller getting traded to the Rams and the Rams going in an absolutely opposite direction than most teams when it comes to building their team. What the Rams did was they looked and said, we have draft picks. What do you do with draft picks? You draft unknown players. You can scout them and scout them and scout them, but until they get to the league, you don't know. What would we rather do? We'd rather take this currency and go get a player we know can play in this league, albeit maybe a little expensive or maybe lost a step or two. Nevertheless, guys that we know what skill set they have, we'd rather plug them into our system than unknowns into our system because we're winning now. If it pays off, great. But if it doesn't pay off, we've really mortgaged the future. The Dolphins did the opposite. They said, you like these players? Well, they're not going to be on the team anymore. And the reason they're not going to be on the team anymore is because we're going to go after a future. So hang with us. We're not going to pay this guy, and we're not going to pay this guy. And we need our quarterback is not on the roster right now. So again, buy Ryan Tannehill, buy Josh Rosen, whatever. We're going to go get our guy. That guy now is Tua Tagovailoa. And for Tua, it's been an up and down career. And as I said at the top of the hour, I wonder, because you never know with a guy's future. He could find a groove with the Dolphins. He could be like Ryan Tannehill and become a superstar somewhere else. Or he could disappear in sort of the vortex that is backup quarterbacks in this league. Right? We joke about it all the time where like a Geno Smith is starting because Russell Westbrook gets an injury. And we're like, Geno Smith? I didn't even know he was on the Seahawks. How many times do you say that? Where you see a quarterback and you're like, oh yeah, that's right, that guy. Right? Raise your hand if you know where Joe Flacco is playing right now. And if you said Jets, you're right. He was traded from the Eagles to the Jets just a couple of weeks ago. Raise your hand if you knew he was on the Eagles. That's how fast you can go from Super Bowl champion to I don't even know where he is right now. And Tua could get lost in that. Tua could be released by the Dolphins, picked up by another team, hang out there for a little bit. But, you know, like it's funny. The real fun example about that is former Bears quarterback Jim McMahon. Jim McMahon is a two-time Super Bowl champion. Why? Because he was a backup of the Green Bay Packers. Right? That happens more than you know. And will we ever get a full picture of whether or not Tua Tagovailoa could be an NFL quarterback? Does the fact that the Dolphins, who don't have the patience at all to wait to see him develop in year 3 or 4 or 5, like Jacksonville will do to Trevor Lawrence, does he suffer because of that? Right? I'll tell you the best example of that. And now you can argue, and you probably make a good case, that NFL executives have given this individual a few opportunities, and maybe the book is written on him. But Josh Rosen was a top 10 pick in the NFL draft. Circumstances caused him to leave Arizona. Circumstances caused him to leave Tampa and Miami. Where is he now? It was San Francisco. I have no idea where he is. Is Tua Tagovailoa, who is one of the more dynamic players in college football and made one of the most historic entrances in college football history, is he destined for that? Because this team, his emergence into the workforce of the NFL and the team that picked him and where they were, they weren't exactly on the same page, right? Imagine you starting a company and you've got everything. You've got the building, you've got the workforce, you've got the technology, you've got the patents, you've got the marketing, you've got the sales force, you've got the distribution chain, you've got it all together. You need a CEO, but you decide the best person to run the company is one of the kids graduating from Harvard Business School. And everything counts on whether or not the kid from Harvard Business School is capable of running your entire company. And if he doesn't do that, then it falls apart. Everything that you've built, everything and every step that you went through to get the building, the patents, the equipment, the workforce, the sales team, all of that goes for naught. That's the Dolphins. They went out and built a better defense. They went out and got weapons. They went out and got draft picks. They went out and got this team together. Oh, yeah, we need a quarterback, and he's not on the roster. Let's go get that guy. And then they went to that guy and said, yeah, here's the deal. Your trajectory is going to be different than a lot of other rookies in this league. You have to take what we've built and get us to a championship. You say what you will about the Patriots starting Mac Jones, but I'll tell you right now, Mac Jones, the Patriots can want to win a Super Bowl and say they want to win a Super Bowl. I don't think they think in that building they're going to win a Super Bowl. But I think they think they're going to win, they're going to be competitive for a Super Bowl down the road faster than a lot of other teams. Right? Miami was like, no, get moving, and you better get moving quickly. And tonight is a perfect example of that. This game, you brought it up earlier, Ron. When they put this on paper, this game looked good.
Yeah,
this looked like a Thursday night game. This looked really promising. This game is not promising. This game is a very good team against a really, really bad football team. And maybe it goes Miami's way because, again, you never know in this league, but it's not billed as a five-star game.
No, this isn't sit down, hey, let's rearrange the schedules to make sure we don't miss a minute.
Exactly.
Now, it could end up that way.
Sure,
we could start getting
Absolutely.
Alerts on our phone saying, hey, close game alert, you know, or Miami's leading by 7 in the going into the fourth quarter, which would shock us all. But, yeah, I mean, I think at the beginning of the season, when the schedule makers were saying, what do we put on Thursday Night Football? They looked at it and went, oh, Tua versus Lamar.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what the selling point was, and we're not getting it.
Yeah, and the Dolphins at this point should be like 5-4.
Yeah.
Instead of 2-7. So.
Yeah, they should be with all the other 5-win teams in the AFC.
Right, exactly. It's all right. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with 2 N's as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
Hold on to me. Don't let me go.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, happy Veterans Day. Again, this is not really a Throwback Thursday from the sense of finding that one thing, but it is in a way because it's the 103rd anniversary of the end of World War One, where we get this date to begin with, the 11th hour of the 11th month, 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, right? That was the end of World War One.
Armistice Day.
103 years, because it was...
It's crazy.
1918 when World
yeah.
War... Yeah. I hope I got my math right.
You did.
I did? Okay. Just want to make sure. Throw it out. Just throw it out there. See what we got. So we're going to be playing patriotic music throughout the show today. We're also going to get our Stephen Mast, right? Shelby Mast.
Shelby Mast.
I'm sorry, Stephen Mast. Shelby Mast is going to join us in Hour 3. We're going to talk some college basketball. He's our bracketology guy. If you've listened to the show a while, every March we usually get Shelby on. Sometimes we get him on in like February to sort of do a what do you think is going to happen in a week or two. But he's our guy that like really helps us out with where exactly the committee would be thinking, you know, all of that. He's excellent, excellent. But we're going to do a little primer for college basketball because it's now rocking and rolling and all underway and everything like that. So if you're, you know, I said this yesterday, I'm a huge college basketball guy. I love it. I'll throw a game on and not even know who's playing. If I just have something on in the background, I'll put on like, I don't know, Grand Canyon against Southern Utah or whatever. And I might not even care about the teams. I just have it on in the background. But I don't get into it. Like, I don't really start focusing on it until really after the holidays, but I'm still so focused on the end of college football and the start of the playoffs. But conference play is when I really get into it. Because I think that the beginning of the college basketball season is like, I don't know, it's like fun appetizers. Right. Hey, we're going to be playing a tournament in Maui. Isn't this great if you are in a cold weather climate Isn't this awesome? Jay Billis is in a Hawaiian shirt. How fun is that? And by the way, it's really dark where you are right now, but it's really light and sunny and warm here in Maui. Isn't this great? Oh, but you want dark? We're going to the Alaska Shootout. Oh, we're going to the Battle of Atlantis. And Las Vegas has got a term. That's like a buffet of appetizers, right? A whole bunch of appetizers. Games that kind of matter, but they don't really matter, but they're fun to watch. You know, like Duke, Kentucky at Madison Square Garden, or Kansas, Michigan State at Madison Square Garden, things like that. But when you get to the conference, the conference games, and there's some, hey, how are we doing? Are we playing? No, these are foes that are familiar with us and we're familiar with them. That's when it starts to pick up. Don't get me wrong. I like the early tournaments, but it's even hard. The thing that always gets me is that you'll see a team go unbeaten through like 11 games or 8 games to start the season, for example. I think Arkansas was a team that did this one year where Arkansas was like 11-0 and you're like, wow, that's pretty impressive. And then you look at their schedule and like, they didn't play anybody. Like nobody on the schedule was any, there wasn't one game where you went, oh, that was a challenge. But then you get to the conference schedule and then challenges. So there's like it's like a 5-course dinner, right? It's just the preseason, the early season fun stuff. Then you got some non-conference games to get warmed up, conference games, and, conference tournament, and then the NCAA tournament. It's like a 5-course meal with college basketball. Hour 2 coming up next.